The profound and wondrous Dharma is rarely encountered, even in 100 million kalpas. Having it to hear, accept, and maintain, may I taste the truth of the Tathagata's worth.
Last week I talked about yes, so this week I want to talk about no. Because yes feels a little more natural in some ways. It affirms nature, connection, flow. And sometimes we can even know yes to affirm loss and change and confusion. So yes feels harmonious, going along with the flow, except when it's not. You know, when it's not in the best interests of life or safety, yes is a big mistake. Or when it's unthinking, when it's yes to avoid risk, it's a big mistake. So the normal course of events, yes seems to reach out, and no seems to push back or strike out. No is dicier, riskier, it's edgy, because it cuts. The natural, the function of no is a kind of cutting action. It cuts through the threads of the weave in front of us in some way. Sometimes to defend, sometimes to get some space. It's unpredictable. And it upsets our order, our plans, our assumptions, our expectations. Emily Dickinson wrote in a letter to a friend, "Don't you know that no is the wildest word we ever consigned to language?" No is the wildest word, she said. Because it upsets the apple cart. So we say no as a first line defense. It comes up real fast, quick response to defend ourselves from what we perceive as a threat. But it's very hard to know when you're defending something true and when you're being defensive. When we perceive a threat, we believe it's so. And once I believe it's so, this is my perception, boy, that becomes how it is. Sometimes we're defending and sometimes we're defensive. Two letters, two little squeaky letters, the difference between defense and defensive. Fence is even shorter. There's fence, defense, and defensive. So a fence is simply something erected, gives a little space, gives some distance. It intervenes, slows things down or stops things. A defense is specifically to stop an invasion. And defensive is the attitude, I've already got it in my hip pocket, let me just take it out and set it up. So the three big questions around no. Can you say it? Can you say no? Do you feel safe to say no? Do you or dare you trust yourself to say no? That's all. Can you say no? That's all question number one. Can you say no? And if you can't, where does the danger lie? Can you say it? And number two is, can you say it skillfully? And what is skillful in saying no? My third question is, once you say no, can you see past the cut, over the breach, across the fence, or between the palings? Can you look out and look in once you've said it? How much cutting off, how much fence does no make? Because if you can't, if no stops you in your tracks, it does. It stops, it cuts, it stops a process. And maybe that's the right thing to do. But in the next moment, where are you going to go from there? There's always, what we do now is the ground for the next moment. So what are you going to do after you say no? Maybe the same question ought to come up when we say yes, but we don't see it so clearly. It doesn't seem to be needed because things are rolling along. When you say no, you know that this could change. After saying no, what are you going to do next? Because if you say no and it stops things so that you can't then look out and then look in, then nothing, no information comes in, and you don't have a lot, anything new from which to take another step. Because we always have to, there is a moving forward, there's always a new moment. And what do you have? How will something new come in to your moment after you said no? No is already something new. What are you going to do with it? So if you can look in and look out after you say no, then no is very creative. And if you can't, it's destructive. And that's where I think the creative and destructive are. We're going to say no. We're going to say it fast. We're going to say it slow. And once we say no, what are we going to do with it? We can't really know ahead of time whether, you know, there is such a thing as being skillful with it, but we're not necessarily responsible to always be skillful with it. There's being able to say no. And the real question is, maybe under what circumstances, and is it defensive or defense, or what are you defending? It's, what do you do next? What do you see looking out? Can you see past your no at all? And if you can't, that's, I guess, one of the definitions of defensive, that you can't see past it. It just fills the sky. If there's nothing there but no, then it's not going to be productive. If you can't look in and see where did it come from, what is it about, what is it taking care of, and what is it not taking care of, it won't be productive. But if you can, then it's very productive. And that wild word can cut very productively, and it can cut very destructively. I have a new book that someone sent me called, it's a pretty good book, called Sex and the Spiritual Teacher. And it's someone I knew very slightly back in Minnesota. He's been around a lot of mostly Zen, but not only Zen groups. And he has many short chapters. Eventually, when I'm done reading, I'll bring it in here. It's and one chapter is called The Power of No. And that chapter is addressed to the teacher. There's another one later to the teacher, because the teacher is the one who has to say no. We like to say yes. You know, it seems to be part of my role. Say yes. Say yes. But if the teacher can't say no, then there's going to be problems for everybody down the line. And then, of course, he talks about the importance for anyone who's a student of being able to say no, thank you to... no, not thank you. No, I'm leaving now if there's any kind of improper advance. He's talking specifically, of course, in his book about sexual misconduct. But the precursor to that is the ability to say no before, to assert a boundary where it's needed. Everything we do at every moment is always responding and creating. It's a creative life we're in. Sometimes we know it, sometimes we enjoy it, sometimes we don't. But at every moment we're responding, and at every moment we're creating. Always, what am I responding to and what am I creating? Every act is a creative act. Every act is also a response to something from outside or inside, response to the universe coming up outside and inside simultaneously. Always responding. We're designed for that. We're very skilled at that. This article said we are that in some areas all different sorts of animals and probably plants too are so refined in the responding that the one photon of light will hit a receptor and a color will be noted, for instance. They can't get any more refined. The light doesn't come in smaller bundles than a photon. And there are many areas in which all different creatures are so refined in our responding that we take in the minutest amount of stimulus. We respond from inside, from outside. And at every moment we create, we do something. In some sense, never done before. So we're always responding to our world. And we're not only responding to the facts of what's in front of us, the something coming to me, something coming up fresh now, outside or inside. It's necessarily so. We're always responding to what's coming up, partly in terms of what's there and partly in terms of this huge data bank we've got going that we've been developing all our lives. We have a huge data bank of previous events and previous responses and how it worked out and how it didn't work out. And we need that. We couldn't function without that. We wouldn't know how to get through a doorway without that. We wouldn't know how to open our mouth and speak. We wouldn't know how to reach a handout if we didn't have this huge data bank. And we hopefully even get to have some kind of a suitable self-protective response out of that. Because we're going to be responding to what comes up, especially when it's time, we think there's time for no. It has a somewhat sudden quality. We have to stop things. We have to intervene. And there's something out of this huge data bank is going to be brought up to as a measure for how to respond. So what's going to come up? Out of what old, deep mind, deep vein, out of what idea in cold storage for a long, long time are we going to bring up an idea of what it is that needs protecting and in what way to do it? What's a threat and what's not, and how to meet threats? We're always responding to what's here now out of a dusty past, more or less dusty past. A meeting, a past and a present. Because we arrive with this huge amount, it's not just baggage on our back, a huge amount of experience. And that's what we bring to our response. Or some of it, or some piece of it, from some place or other inside. Another one of the old deep places may say it's wrong to say no, period. Don't go there. Or go around it. Or duck under it. All kinds of old experience. So out of this huge, vast well of experience and data, examined and unexamined, conscious and unconscious, the first thing no does is put up a fence. Creates a space, makes a boundary. For your autonomy. Without a boundary, without a fence of some sort, we don't have a boundary, we don't have autonomy. No, this may not be done to me. No, this may not be done to you. So, learning to trust ourselves, A, that we can say no, and B, that we won't stop there, but we'll keep on inquiring, or in fact begin an inquiry there, out of what it comes from, what out there and what in here, and where do I go from here? Something new comes up when we say no. Something new comes up when we say yes, but we don't notice it so well. But no is a shift and a change, and so we can take that really good opportunity to notice, to look. And if we don't, we're stuck. The no is based on what value or what view. Is it an ancient and no longer needed fear? Does it support your integrity, this no? It's kind of a posting a no trespassing sign. But it also can be an unthinking and knee-jerk reaction, or it can be a boundary that permits autonomy, that encourages our autonomy. So you make a boundary. What kind of boundary are we making when we say no? A boundary is a good thing to have. It gives shape. Boundaries are needed to make things possible. Without boundaries, nothing much is possible. Without a boundary to your body, you would just kind of flow away under the door if you didn't, you know. Without a boundary on our mouth, we say all kinds of things we don't mean. So there's all kinds of, but mostly the boundaries say, I am here. And then we have to say, what kind of I and what does it mean to be here? Or it says, I'm not exactly the same as Moy. So now what will we do about it? We can do a lot more with it if we know we're not the same person than if we didn't know that. The boundary makes things possible. We can't meet if we don't have boundaries. We can't create if there isn't a place from which the creating happens. Restraint is one of the boundaries that makes things possible. Because not all boundaries do that. Some boundaries are, you know, noli me tangere, don't come near. And that shuts out, and so new doesn't come in. A boundary or a no can't be creative if nothing new is allowed in. But a restraint is the kind of boundary that makes things possible, and that's what the meaning of restraint is in the precepts. Since we've been talking off and on about the precepts, we have a group sewing rakusus to receive the precepts. So almost everyone here knows that in Zen precepts, there are 10 grave precepts that say, a disciple of the Buddha does not kill. No to killing. No to doing harm. No to taking what is not given. Right? No to sexual misconduct or acting out. No to dishonest speech or lying. These are kind of a universal vow of restraint from harm. And then, out of that, you can turn to the particular ways to not harm, to do the positive thing. Out of this openness that's created by the restraint from harm. So this is restraint creates a huge openness. It's vast. And the Buddha Dharma says that the basic of underpinning is that if you refrain from harm, connection can naturally flow in healthy ways. That the natural flow of life and energy is already present. And if we remove if we have restraint, we remove the harm making, so that there's an open field in which life will naturally flow. That's really the premise of, or the meaning of emptiness. A great Buddhist term of emptiness, or shunyata, is an open negative that says vast. This is not just this or just that, vast. Bodhidharma, in answer to a question of what is the Buddha Dharma, said, vast emptiness, nothing holy. Nothing that's holy over here and, sorry, unholy over here? No, vast. Vast and inclusive. Empty of any one view being true or complete. Every time I say no or you say no, we're pulling up a view. My view is that this is wrong. I'm going to take that out of my data bank and circumstance, put it together and say, my view here is that this is wrong. Fine, but do we remember that views are partial? It's the view from where I stand right now? That's what view means. But we don't say that. We say, this is my view. And then we say, this is how it is. We forget the part about how this is how it is from where I stand right now. And then I take another breath. It's a different time, a different world. We want continuity, but not fixity. And so emptiness says, not fixed and limited, but vast. So it's not a vacuum or nothing. Empty of any one view being completely and absolutely true and complete, including my no. Doesn't mean I shouldn't say it. I should remember that it's right in a certain situation and then needs to be looked at. The view that we erect as a, and forget that is partial or temporary, or the view from where I stand right now, becomes a wall. And then when we're behind a wall, we can't get new information in, so the wall stays. It gets more and more solid because there isn't anything new coming in for the next moment. And we're stuck behind it. Now, the precepts ask us in each one to restrain ourselves from believing that a partial view of the moment is an absolute truth. So the restraint in each of the precepts is a huge affirmation. The no, I won't take what is not given, is a huge affirmation of opening the way for what can truly be given and shared. The no of non-harming opens the way hugely to what can we do together. This is a very, no is a very, very positive word in the precepts. And if we dissolve these encrusted rigidities of our views, of our ideas about how things are, and say, no, it's not like that, then we can find out how it is. Then life can flow. Saying yes and no, yes and no, yes and no as it rolls along. One of the things Zazen does, is one of the things that useless Zazen is useful for, Zazen is a way of distinguishing between a healthy fence you can see through and a blockade or a wall. We all know how to sit down and feel that there's a blockade there, inside us, in front of us. We know the experience of wall, of being blocked. And one of the things Zazen does is says, okay, that's where you are. Now experience this. And then how are you going to move on to the next moment? It's always, here you are, and what is coming up in the next moment? So Zazen is also in itself a form of restraint. We restrain ourselves from running around doing 10 things that particular half hour. We restrain ourselves from complete freedom of the mind just rattling on, because what we do is we say every now and then, we say, oh, here you are rattling along, come back. That's the restraint. Oh, come back. Come back to being present here and now. Very positive form of restraint. Restrain myself from being just caught up in my confusion and come back here. Restraint in the service of openness. And when you do that kind of restraint in the service of openness, you don't lose your boundaries, but they expand. That what is me, when we're caught behind a blockade or a wall, being me behind that wall is a very tight, narrow, unpleasant place to live. We all know that one. And when we can see that that is a moment's view, and if moments are all coming and going and do not have to continue into the next moment, and if it's an important one, it'll come back. If it's not important, it may come back too. But it doesn't have to, because it was there in the last moment, it doesn't have to be there in the next. The mind is moving. That view, that's the kind of thinking. We open the hand of thinking so that our views can drop out, clunk. And that's why Uchiyama Roshi thought they were heavy. When he opened the hand of thinking, he went like this so they could go clunk on the floor, one view after another. That's why we speak of something called big mind sometimes in terms of Zen and Zazen. Because the when you sit and let the partial, limited, wall-like views drop, at that time, the life is quite open. It's not without boundaries, but the boundary of what is me has expanded, and life feels spacious. Not limited by our preconceived notions. So it's also called wild mind. Like Emily would have liked that. And it's not unruly mind. We have more than enough of that. So he said Zazen in a way to distinguish between wild mind and unruly mind. There are two different kinds of no and two different kinds of yes in the wild and in the unruly. So the difference between an unruly mind and an untrammeled mind. Without restraint, life is just a welter of impressions. It's very hard to do anything. Very hard to make sense of things. So you say no. You put up a fence. You declare restraint by yourself or by the other. What's next? Sometimes what's next is having to say it again. And again, and again, and again. To learn to live where we have to be able to say no in the way of restraint again, and again, and again, without it wearing us down is very difficult. When we feel hampered by that restraint, it gets especially difficult. When we feel squeezed by it. When we can understand that we can feel our restraint as in the service of self-protection, it's easier to say it again and again and again. So after you've said no, and put up a fence, what will you do next? Everything is always responding and creating. What will you do next? After responding no, what's the creation of the next moment? It's not only the next moment. It's when you say no, what are you saying yes to? That's really what it comes down to. When you say no, what are you saying yes to? So is a boundary to keep things out, or is a boundary to define so that you can figure out where you are and where the other person, event, thing is, and relate in a true way? Well, after no, are you... I know the times, for instance, when after I say no, I feel isolated or aggrieved. Working from an old agenda then, which narrows the options terribly. We can't see very clearly. So we can, even then, all we see after saying no sometime is we feel aggrieved or isolated. Even that's good information. If we remember that it's not the truth about life, but good information. If I feel aggrieved, why? If I feel isolated, why? And what do I want to do about it? What about the way I said no contributed to this unhappy state of affairs? We're not trying to create suffering here. If I've created suffering in myself or others with my no, I want to know about it. I want to figure out whether there's something I could do different now or not. It's very important to see that when we create a defensive wall or fence, we're limiting our options terribly. We're not getting any new information. Nothing new comes in. Then we cannot have a creative response because we're stuck. We're stuck, can't find our own reality or reality into which to move. When no is appropriate, it's a positive statement. It often, and we need to know. We need to be able to pay attention, say, oh, what is it in service of? What am I saying? In what way am I saying, what am I saying yes to when I say no? Usually we're saying this to ourselves after we've said it, because no comes up real quick, usually. And if it can't come up when you want it to, boy, that's also really important. So when is no a yes to yourself? And when is no a yes to life? And when is no a no to life and no to yourself? When is it? When it's clear and productive, it's an affirmation. The affirmations of no. It's not just strong. We know no is strong and powerful. The question is, how do we work with that great power? No goes against the grain. It's the wildest word. And it is also the grain itself. No is itself a voice of the creative impulse. Just as yes is. Anything that is a creative response to what's here is the grain, is the creative act. Whether it's yes or whether it's no. I think most of us have already discovered in our lives that once we learn about saying no, yes takes on a whole new quality. Yes is a lot firmer, a lot richer or stronger when we know how to say no. Because otherwise we can't, when we don't know how to say no, then yes, it can't tell if it's just going along with the flow and kind of letting things roll on, or whether it's actually an actual affirmation of life and of our path and our direction or of our connection. I think it takes understanding no to understand yes. So that doesn't mean you should all say no to me. No, right? Oh no, but don't do it too much, because we get scared of it. It's abrupt in us, and it's abrupt when it comes to us. And so it calls therefore for some kind of kindness around it. Acceptance on the one hand that it happens in us and around us, and it happens, tends to happen suddenly and not always skillfully. So can we remember, what does it take to remember when someone says no to you, that they and you are more than that no? We tend to shrink things down in that moment to that no, because it tends to be kind of loud in our ears. And when we react to the no rather than to the person or situation that brought it up. So the breadth or the openness of Zazen and of that kind of restraint isn't about whether you can say no or not, or it's a loud voice or a small voice. It's more about, can I hold my seat when you say no, remember whether it's skillful or not, that you're not intending to be unskillful, I'm not intending to be unskillful, and yet it happens. It's one of the meanings of Sangha or friendship or love, that with the person we have that positive connection to, we have a kind of implicit understanding, or almost an implicit contract, that I will try to see you widely, you will try to see me widely, and when one of us seems the other to be narrow, we'll try to remember that that's not all that's going on. That if you can't say no, it's very hard to tolerate someone else saying no. It's another good reason to learn. It's when we know how to really say no as it is, not no with all my whole personal history behind it, but no appropriate to this situation from my experience, then yes gets a whole lot truer too. So to say no in a way that's saying yes, in some way we know that we are saying yes to something true in ourselves or in each other. That's an art. And I think the restraint of the Buddhist precepts is restraint from the kind of impulsivity that makes it harder to find the form of yes or affirmation in the no. That doesn't make a no weaker. It makes it stronger if it has that kind of, if it's affirming something positive. Once long ago, a Zen teacher who spent a great deal of time studying Dogen, he's a Japanese, was talking a comment on a commentary on one of Dogen's essays, and Dogen says you should think three times before speaking. And he said, you know what? I think Dogen was an angry man. You know, he had a lot of trouble with that mouth of his, and so he was speaking to himself because he couldn't think three times before he spoke. He told himself to do that. So we're going to tell ourselves to do things that we can't do, but it doesn't mean it's not a good idea to go in that direction. So. How do you feel about no?
Sometimes no is complicated.
Yeah,
we have to defend it.
Right, it's complicated. We don't even know what we're defending half the time. It's so complicated.
Or if you know what you're defending, trying to explain that whole defense of it is complicated.
Because now we've got no to what we said, and then we've got this defense that's a whole other no on top of it.
And the reaction from
the other person is probably another no. So we've got a whole bunch of little no's running around together.
Or what do you mean no? You know, what part of no don't you get?
The part that has to do with me. You saying it to me. That's the part we don't usually get. Thomas?
I have trouble with decision and things. So no is, you know, it can be hard. And I was reminded of that Bob Marley thing, not so much the biblical thing, but that your yeas be yeas and your noes be no. You know, like really good teaching. But I heard this indigenous thing that I try to use sometimes about if it's a big decision or something, then you wait like 3 days. You don't always get a chance to do that, but because I flip-flop back and forth, and I want to, you know, please people or something like that, so I'm not really speaking from, you know, maybe my gut feeling. Your gut feeling can be really good and accurate, but then if my fear is uncaused...
Yeah, the first word response isn't always the best one.
Yeah, and then it's not really accurate because it's fear, so... But that's helped me for big things to
wait, as Dogen
suggested. To wait, because I'll flip-flop about 6 times until I get to that third day. Then I got a little idea, okay, you know, which flip is the right one.
Some of us need someone to try them out on. That's what a friend is for sometimes.
Yeah.
Is to be able to say no, and say, no, I don't like the look on your face tells me that wasn't such a good response, good answer. Let me try another one. Or even feel it in ourselves. Sometimes unless we try out the no or the yes, we're not going to know where we are, especially if we're a little indecisive. It's complicated. It's never going to get easy. AJ, Alice.
I just think I've been interested lately in that edge of no, which kind of goes with fear in it, where no, looking at when no happens, no, what part of that was fear, and are you saying yes to just the way things have always been?
Because the question, what is it that you're saying yes to? Yeah, it's so important. Yeah,
fear.
There tends to be a lot of fear in it for us. Yeah.
I like that image of kind of looking through that fence you just put up and go,
If I can't see, if there isn't enough room to see through, or if I find I'm not seeing anything, look in or look out, then that's trapped. That's a trapped state. Yeah. Otherwise, there's fear of that we then go through. So even the fact of it being fear doesn't tell us if it's productive or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh. I mean, the minute you started talking about this, the image arose in my mind of, you know, you're talking about the word no and saying no and all that, but I couldn't help but think of the time that George Bush came up and decided to give Angela Merkel a little neck rub. Did you ever see that? And her reaction was just, she didn't even say anything. She just went shrug off like that, and it just made him look really stupid. But
she had a role,
that you kind of visceral no.
Yeah, you don't need to use words always to say no. Yeah. Yeah, there's the no said with the body. Lisa.
I've done a practice where I told myself that I have to say 3 no's a day. And the first week, if they're very superficial no's, like, no, I don't want to go to the movie, or no, I don't want to go for a walk. And then the second week, they have to be bigger no's. And it's a very interesting process just to sort of see all the baggage that goes along with saying no in the first place.
Well, that, you know, and what's in there is that that's the part where you said, it, no, I don't want to. It's when we're indecisive, because we don't know what I want to.
Yes.
Yeah, and so no, I don't want to is in the service of saying, no, what do I want? What do I want?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like an interesting one. Barry.
There's this, to me, there's this huge field between yes and no, which is where the negotiation takes place between our needs and others. And I had this experience recently where being kind of a people pleaser, you know, wanting to be liked by other people, somebody asked me something and I just said yes, and like 30 seconds later I was like, why did I say yes to you? I totally don't want to do that. You know, and yeah. So I went back to them. Normally I would not do that. Normally I'd just stew and be resentful and project all kinds of judgment on them for having any agreement with what I
did. Sounds familiar.
So I went back to them and I said, you know, I don't know why I said yes to that. Actually, this is what I'm needing, and I see I'd also like to accommodate your need. And the other person was completely and totally relaxed about it. They're like, oh yeah, that's fine, you know. So we just kind of negotiated something, and I just realized, like, oh, how often it's like there's a no implied in my yes. Yes, I want the favor of your attention.
Yes.
You know, and agreement, so it pumps up my self-image. But no, I don't really want to do this for you, whatever it is. So I'm going to hold it against you, or, you know, or have some negative energy around it. So it was really interesting to see. I think the thing that was alarming to me was how quickly that happened. Like, that part of me is like autopilot.
Yeah.
I said it, and then like 5 seconds later, I was like, who was that controlling my mind? Where did I go? But, and also to see how open the other person was, like, you know, there's the shadow side of that is that there's a fear that if I reject them, I'm going to get some kind of negative reaction back.
Yeah.
You know, which sometimes happens, but probably usually doesn't.
Probably not as often as we think it will. Yeah. Watching that whole parade go by. Amazing.
The clowns.
Bruce, what?
Well, just sitting here listening to you, it occurred to me that no is actually yes from the other side.
The question is, what is it we're saying yes when we say no? What are we saying yes to? Am I saying yes to the fact that I'm afraid, or to my fear? Am I saying yes to taking care of myself in a proper protection for this being, or am I saying yes to protecting some image of myself? You know, what is it?
Well, I know that at times no has given me the freedom to then say yes.
Yeah.
I know when my ex-wife used to ask me things, my first reaction was usually no. And then I would take a moment to process it, and I go, well, yes, I can do this, but these conditions or under these circumstances.
Yeah. I must say, I noticed in myself at one point a knee-jerk reaction of no, and then I could come around to yes. And it was when I first started having positions of authority, beginning levels of authority in the Zen world. At that time, when I started with no, it had this ripple effect. I was knowing into other people's lives, and then I would come around to yes, but they'd already had no. And so the difference between in a personal, in myself, or in a relationship with one other person, what's the effect of my starting with no and getting around to yes? Well, if it's going to be habitual, I can both get over it and sort of train this friend into understanding that I kind of tend to start that way, and then I won't stay there. But that there is a habitual no in some of us, and I've been working my way out of that most of my adult life, and it's not completely there.
But sometimes yes can be unsafe. and cannot be the right answer.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There's that knee-jerk yes we do, and it's yes, I'll let things roll along, or yes, I want your favor, or yes, I don't want to have to think about it, or yes, it feels good to say yes. Oh, that came up very recently. It feels so good to say yes until we realize what we've committed ourselves to, that it isn't so good for us after all. So, no, yes is, but we can see the dicier side easier with no. That's one reason it's so useful, so productive. We don't notice it so much with yes until this, you know, the situation where right there you say, oh my God, look what I've just committed myself to, that I'm going to resent. But with no, we tend to be brought up to an awareness of the risky side and the dicier side of it. So it can be very productive if we don't get trapped in our defensiveness. So yeah, no is a good basis for yes. Karina?
I've also been experimenting with no lately, and
not with me.
No.
Yes. Yeah.
And what's been helpful to me is looking at myself as if I'm 2-year-old and experiencing the terrible twos where you learn how to say no for the first time.
Yeah.
And everything is no, no, no. And it's, I try to look and say, is this a, I forgot the word you used, but a no acting, supporting life or not? And sometimes it's supporting life for me just because I'm able to say it and able to experience it, even if it, you know, it might be all right to do the thing that the friend is asking me to do, but it's also all right to stay home and relax. And it's just nice to experience as if it's a brand, I'm a terrible 2-year-old, and just to get more familiar with no.
I had one friend who had raised 3 kids through the terrible twos, and whenever they said, no, I don't want lunch, she would come say, that's a great idea. Would you like a snack instead? You know, this agreeing, you know, that it's validating, no, these 3 grew up to be, you know, fine, upstanding people. Because, maybe in a way, because they no was validated. Can you imagine if all our no got, that sense got, yeah, okay, that's fine. Or can I stay home with you? You know, don't want to go to the movies. But just to be able to say it when it's clean and free, but that's what we're looking for in that 2-year-old one. I want to be able to just say it, and no harm and no ripples. It's just, it's an assertion of self just like the 2-year-old. And it doesn't have to be harmful for anyone if no one has an agenda. Mom usually has to have an agenda called getting on with life, but she doesn't always have to have it in quite the way she thinks. Yeah. I'll come play with you. We can say no together. See that?
Just sit around saying no.
Yeah. Love.
What's a little confusing is being very concerned about how you feel, because the things that have been most important to me ultimately were best. Most instructive experiences were when things that didn't feel good. You know, an example, my father-in-law came to live with, when I was about 35, my father-in-law called from, you know, the East Coast and said, you know, he was 89, he said, you know, I'm not walking up this, I can't walk up my 4th floor walk up anymore, you know, I'm coming. And he lived, you know, with us for 7 years, and it was really, really difficult. But I, after the experience, I often would reflect how glad I was no one asked me how I felt about it.
Because you would have wanted to say, no, don't.
In other words, Grandpa didn't ask, well, how would you feel if I came to live with you? You know, thank heavens he didn't, you know. And the same, you know, my husband and I, it wasn't like, how did we feel about it? It was just what was going to happen. We were just going to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's true of a lot of things that tend to be the worthwhile things. They're out of the realm of
yes and no. Yeah.
Yeah. They just skip
Right, because if that no, if you had said no, it would have cut off a whole possibility. That kind of no, a no that's defensive, that makes a wall, and then you don't get to have the whole experience of living with them.
So, feel, a lot of times we're told, check in with your feel. How does this feel? Does it feel good?
Yeah. And sometimes it's, no, it doesn't.
And it's not about that.
But so you still are saying yes. You said yes.
Oh, of course.
Right. So there was a saying, there was a statement in it, and that was the right one. At some point, it wouldn't hurt. At some point, I'm sure you did at some point say, my feelings say no, but I'm not going to act on them. It doesn't mean we're always going to,
I guess a lot of things in life, we're not given we just do them.
We say yes or we say no because it's essential.
It's essential.
Yeah. Yes is essential and no is essential too, depending on the time and the place and the person. You've probably said equally essential no's in your life.
I wish.
Okay, why don't we close off now? Yes, no? And before we close, let's see. Before we close, it's Zen Fest time is here again. And both of our coordinators are here. Someone, do you have any words of wisdom for us?
You can pick up your raffle tickets if you have not